Greetings. Welcome to Confessing the Blues. I'm your host, Jim Ange Anderson. We've got a two-part show today. The first segment features drummer, percussionist, drum tech, and music megaplex entrepreneur Grant Niebergall. That's followed by my discussion with Susan Williams and Daryl Wright, talking about their careers and their upcoming album, It's About Time. Let's roll! Grant Niebergall, welcome to the Farmhouse Studios.
Thank you, Jim. It's great to be here.
Well, you have some exciting news. You have got lots of exciting news.
Yes.
First of all, you're a drummer, you're a percussionist, mm-hmm. you're a business owner. Mm-hmm. Tell us about One Fine Tune.
Well, One Fine Tune started in June of 2009 in a 1.5 car garage in Homewood, Illinois. And it was literally a vision that I had to, I saw a bench in a dream. I know that probably sounds a little bit crazy, but I acted on that vision. And what I did was I built that bench the next morning. And as faith would have it, and just in prayer, I just followed that vision and I built the bench. And the next thing I know, I called a friend of mine who owns, I was assistant manager at Guitar Center. And now runs that store in Country Club Hills, Dan Cirillo. And he ended up giving me my first client. And it's been off and running ever since. I started with no networking, no clients, no website, no Facebook page, no nothing. It was just my word, my integrity, my price, and craftsmanship.
And what do you do at One Fine Tune?
Well, I started off as a drum shop,
mm-hmm.
and I'm still focused on being a drum shop, so I still do an awful lot of drums. I've been blessed and been lucky to, over the last 8 years, to get myself into clients like the Police, the Navy, Mary J. Blige's drum tech, Cedric Kraut. I work with some of the top gospel drummers in Chicago, Chris Miskell, Jason Grant, Dwayne Dio Bradford, to name a few. I've had a chance to do some tech work for Mark Shulman from Pink, and it's a long list of people. So, but it's a tech division / drum shop. So I've had the opportunity to basically modify and customize ProTune, do bearing edges, cut shells, do all kinds of neat things to drums and percussion without altering their sound. Into a negative direction. Let's just say that it's all been positive.
So a lot of sort of restorative, renovative kind of work.
Yes, and I am, as I understand it, I'm technically the only business owner that does it. I know there's a lot of hobbyists out there because they actually turn to me sometimes for advice as well on certain things. Because, not to be technical, but in the world of drums, ply, radius, bearing edge, those are important factors in the drum itself.
So for a layman, what do those things mean?
In layman's terms, it's just basically cutting and remilling a drum.
Okay, so aside from the technical stuff, mm-hmm. that it seems that drums were the original musical instruments, right? That the people would communicate through drums from village to village, mm-hmm. and that sort
yes,
of thing. So
absolutely.
Spiritually, what does the a drum mean to you?
Well, it's not so much as a spiritual thing as a release, although you can be spiritual with it. You can use it in forms of worship or in forms of healing, because that's actually what drums are also known to do. If you've ever heard of a healing drum circle, for instance, and that's a bunch of people who get together on a beach or in a platform, and they'll start playing djembes, dumbeks, all kinds of like African or Latin percussion, and what'll happen. That's actually magical in itself, and could be on a spiritual level for some people, because there have been accounts of people who've actually feel a certain kind of euphoria when they're drumming and stuff. So you put 10 people in a room who don't even know each other, and you get them doing things like that, polyrhythms and stuff like that, and they're looking at you and go, "Dad, what did I just do?"
Right.
And they can't explain it. There's a certain rhythm that the human body walks to, I guess the easiest way I could put it. And, you know, the old saying is every person walks to the beat of their own drum. So even someone like yourself, now you're a guitarist and a phenomenal one at that, and I see how you pick, and you pick certain patterns. If you took those patterns and actually applied them to a drum, it's something that actually almost happens live in a situation. In fact, when you and I had an opportunity to work with Little Johnny recently at Pickups, I listened to what your guitar patterns were and tried to accent some of your hits just to, you know, put that more in the moment.
Sure. So it's the rhythm that right. Of that instrument.
Right. Yeah. And that was spiritual to me because it feels good because there's a time to do something that can accentuate something and not step on, you know, which unfortunately sometimes you see that. People want to be up in front.
Right.
I've always felt as a drummer being back.
And music, you know, some people think of it as a competition, but I think of it more as a communication.
Absolutely.
And there it's a perfect example of us communicating.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Exactly. You and I and me and Susan and Daryl and everybody else I've worked with, Billy King and some of the greats, you know, it's humbling for me to be able to, because I've been playing all my life and I don't consider myself to be any better than anybody else or anything like that, keeping it real. As you would know, as a guitarist, that every guitarist brings it different to the table as every other guitarist. It's the same with drummers and stuff like that.
Right.
And sometimes you just got to remember that and stay focused on those principles, and it'll do a lot of good for you.
So you say you've been playing your whole life. Can you tell us a little bit of how you got started playing the drums or playing percussion?
Well, when I was five years old, I took piano lessons from one of Glenn Miller's piano players that my father used to take me to across the street from my grandmother's house in Park Ridge, Illinois. And his name is Russ Colbert. And, you know, I was doing my lessons, and I was doing all right, I guess. But there was a time that Russ actually took my father to the side, and he told me to sit down in the foyer. And I could still hear within an earshot of the conversation they were having. And so my father came over, and he's just like, well, how did he do today? And he's just like, yeah, you know, he's really good. And my dad's like, excellent. So he's going to be a good piano player. He goes, no, he's not. He's going to be a good drummer.
Great.
And my dad's like, no, he's not.
Yeah.
So keeping it clean, I'm just saying, no, he's not.
Yeah. So, and the piano was actually a percussive instrument.
Yes, it is. It is. It's a different kind of it's a different kind of movement, you know, because mm-hmm. you have to understand dexterity and things like that. And believe it or not, dexterity with fingers can also be used on drums as well, mm-hmm. you know, for doing certain things. So I waited 5 years to get my first drum set. I was 10 at that point. My father got me a 1960s Kent drum set that was in the attic of an employee's uncle. And that was my first drum set. And man, it was awesome. It was just awesome. You know, so there I was in the basement of my house, and I was listening to vinyls of the Cars, Kansas, Boston, and the Beatles, and stuff like
mm-hmm.
that. And I ended up just grasping what I could there. I did take a few drum lessons. I started joining bands in junior high school, grade school, and things like that. And you know, took that moving forward, and in application of notes and patterns and things like that, mostly rudiments. So when I was doing those, you know, those taught me the foundation with any student, you know, and the students that I teach today, I teach a little bit differently. I try to take a backdoor approach because it's almost like it's really, and I'm sure I could speak on behalf of a lot of drummers, when you have to sit down and do rudiments, it can be frustrating if you don't have somebody by your side because they'll give you an assignment once a week. You got to go home and go, da, 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 you know, doubles, and you're like, it's driving me crazy. But when I sit down, like I have my student Oliver today, and here's a kid that a little over a month ago didn't even know how to hold sticks.
Right.
I had a very short period of time to get him ready for four songs to play at his church that were contemporary songs, and they weren't exactly easy songs either. He had to learn backbeats, solid backbeats. He had to learn timing, and he nailed it. But I think what probably helped him was just my approach to it without frustrating him too much. So over those courses of years that I learned everything, I made it my own, and I just basically shot it back out to what I'm doing now.
So at One Fine Tune, you're, in addition to fixing, renovating drums,
mm-hmm.
you also do lessons, Mm-hmm. And it sounds like you have some other interesting things going on.
I have a lot of great things going on.
So you're in a new space, and it's mm-hmm. large, so mm-hmm. you have room yes. for different activities.
I've expanded about four times already, mm-hmm. And each place has been bigger and different at that. You know, with it's a journey is what it is. It's a business journey that I've really enjoyed, starting off in Homewood. And then, you know, moving to East Hazelcrest for a very short period of time. I rented a house there, had all my drums and everything all around in the basement and that kind of thing of the house there. It doesn't take, it's almost like setting up a camp.
Right. You know? Circus.
Exactly, or a circus for that matter. And, you know, I've had a lot of great people come through every location that I've been in. And, you know, George Benson's drummer Kahari used to come into my house in East Hazelcrest. And, you know, I had a lot of people come out to my place when I was living out in Crest Hill, out by Joliet for a short time. And then I got an opportunity. I was actually, funny story how I got into my second to last building. Into my new building. I was down in Nashville working with Mark Shulman from Pink. And I was working with Yanni's drummer, Charlie Adams, and I was working with Loverboy's drummer, Matt Frenette, and Billy Mason from Tim McGraw, formerly of Tim McGraw, mm-hmm. On one platform. It was four drummers, and they were all playing to tracks with big, huge screen TVs behind them. It was just an extraordinary event. I got a text from my landlord, and he's just like, you know, I appreciate you. You're a great client, but I'm going to do something different with the property. Well, there I was with a full bag of work to do, and right. I had to move. So, as luck would have it, a little bit of faith, I ended up getting into this location in Homewood that went literally from 800 square feet to 2,400 square feet. I've never seen or heard of a shop that size, personally. So, what I decided to do was, obviously, in business, you have to roll the dice and expand, you know, and resource yourself pretty well. And since I had 8 years under my belt and I had a 5-star rating with a lot of my clients, my Facebook page was always doing really well. All my analytics are doing great online. You know, everybody had good things to say about my work and the way I treated them, because that's the other side of the coin, is treating people like people and not money, you know.
And music business. People forget about the whole business part, you know.
Right.
It's neglected sometimes.
Right, yeah. Right. And you know, I've seen people get taken advantage of in retail, and I've seen people, you know, you hear stories of people who have been taken advantage of even in instrument repair, you know. And I respect, you know, what people have to do to make a living, but, you know, there's more than one way to move money around if you know what you're doing. If you don't, well, you know, some people you hear stories about how they'll go off and they'll say, well, I want to start an amp repair shop, you know, mm-hmm. and they'll have, you know, amps repaired and that kind of thing. And they'll be doing that. And next thing you know, all these amp companies start coming to them, you know, and they say, hey man, why don't you sell our stuff for you? And they get all excited about, oh man, I'll have a million people coming through. My store will be busy and I'll be making profit and this kind of, and then they have, you know, 400 or 500 amps around them and that they owe money on at the end of the month. You know, and I've had that opportunity too, as far as like with drum companies. But I believe honestly that, you know, there's a time for everything as well. Since I'm mom and pop and non-corporate, I've really taken an approach to supporting smaller businesses like custom-made drumsticks. Diamondback is one of them out of Texas. Cooper Groove is another one out of Chicago. And they're both very interesting drumstick manufacturers because they put a great twist on them. You know, I deal with, you know, basically just companies that are like myself.
Just focused on the task at hand. You don't want to be a superstore.
Right.
It's a niche, but it's your niche.
Right.
Yeah.
So with the rest of the building, you know, obviously wanting to expand, I had a vision when I actually hit the door. And, I mean, I walked into a Moab bomb. I mean, this place was destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
And I ended up looking around the room, and as I was actually talking to the property manager, who's, you know, didn't know a thing about me, you know,
right.
He ended up, you know, talking to me about this place, and I walked in, and he goes, so what do you think? And I mean, most people are probably like, I'm getting out of here. I looked at it and just, again, saw a vision of what could be what. And then I ended up saying, I'll take it.
Yeah.
He's like, you will? I said, yeah. So... we got through the formalities of all that. I moved in last November, and it ended up, since then, I've actually channel partnered with Step North Media. And Step Up North Media has five radio stations and a TV station that they've built over the last amount of years with over 160 countries. So I thought that was a good move, because originally what I was going to do was I was going to have independent contractor benches fixing every instrument across the board, up way through, including guitars and amps, right, and so forth. But, you know, I get that there's a lot of home repair people that are out there, and that's okay. I have no problem with that. I don't have a competitive bone in my body. It's about meeting my clients' needs. So I've shaken hands with a lot of these guys who do these kind of repairs, and, you know, I'm not about marking something up either, you know, and just basically making sure that my clients are happy, even if I don't make a profit on it, because, you know, I think there's a right time and a wrong time to make a profit. You know,
you're making relationships at that
making
point.
Relationships,
yeah.
Right. And that goes a long way, because I think that's really what's gotten this company to where it's at, is just by being integral and honest and, you know, fair priced and that kind of thing. But since Step North moved in, I've always had a vision of, you know, just being a media outlet of some kind, like yourself, mm-hmm, with this, because broadcasting somebody's journey is very important outside of music. And so I said, what if I took the balance of both those things, turned it into something like, you know, special, that people can just have another way of doing it, but yet around the world. So, again, a show like mine and a show like yours would be, you know, both shows. But we actually work off each other, because at this point, you know, when I'm doing my thing down the road and when it gets ready to launch, you and I can actually probably work off each other with certain things, too.
Different audiences, or even a crossover of audiences.
A crossover, yeah. Exactly, yeah. You know. If everybody could play nice in the sandbox like that, I think the world would be a better place.
About it. So what do you, what are the plans or the visions for the media, for the shows, for the radio shows, television shows?
Well, it really wasn't my idea, because I didn't, you know, I don't put myself in any kind of vanity or vain position saying, dig me, look what I do.
Right.
I try to be as real as possible, and so it was actually one of the producers from Step North, who's actually the CEO, John, who's also very, very well known, suggested that we have one fine-tuned television and radio, because when I gave him my business model and showed him what I did, and after he actually came in and saw the place that we ended up partnering in, you know, channel partnering and him coming into, he was like, it's great. You got a stage and everything.
I built a sound stage
with a full PA, drums, bass amp, and a backline there. So bands from the south side could actually come and rehearse. And I'm first to market with that.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody's doing it on the south side. So it's just great.
And so in addition to rehearsal space, you've talked about maybe doing some jam sessions and, mm-hmm, drum circles and things like that.
Right. I really wanted to turn it into a multiplex of opportunity for people to come in and perform, record, document, clinic, you know, do anything that they need to do. You know,
we even mentioned Shirley King having a book signing, right?
Yes, you know, we're talking about Shirley King doing a book signing.
And that's
there. Truly
a multiplex. I like that.
Yeah.
The term. That's good.
You know, to have her come in and share the stories of her father with Bibi. You know, in her documents and stuff like that she does, even the Sunday prior, you know, she came out to Cousins with Billy King. I had the opportunity to sit in with her again. You and I got to sit in with, mm-hmm, her the first time, which was kind of fun. And then it ended up, she asked me what the foundation of my loving the blues was. And I looked at her and it just came back like a flood. It was probably 1978, I was at the Desplaines Library, and I remember going up to the counter and I'm saying, I want to learn something about the blues and how to play blues. And the librarian knew me already, because I used to go and say, I want to learn how to play rock, and I want to learn how to do it.
Right.
Because I was
right.
just a budding drummer at the time. And she turned me on to B.B. King Live of Cook County.
Classic. Yeah.
A classic as an understatement. And that was my first turn on to the blues, and it happened to be her father. So it was kind of cool.
Well, it's funny, because I was going to ask you, why the blues?
Well, you know, what I tried to do as a young drummer is I've always been one to look and listen. You know, it's kind of like crossing the street. You look both ways type of thing. And I never wanted to narrow myself down to just one style of music.
Sure.
Rock was dominant just because rock was popular back then. And the blues has always been around. But, you know, when you're young, you think young. You know, you think what's hip and what's hot and that kind of thing. I still wasn't that guy, you know. So I just ended up wanting to learn it all. And I heard different approaches on the radio and stuff like that. I mean, I used to listen to WLS, and, you know, they'd play all kinds of cool stuff. And I'd heard blues music, and I was intrigued by it. But I don't know. It was just one of those things. One day I just said, today I'm going to learn the blues.
Yeah.
You know, I had an agenda. In manner of speaking. So that was it.
And being in the Chicago area, I mean, it's in the water, it's in the air, and it is on the, I mean, on radio and television, where maybe these days it isn't as much as it was back then.
Right, you know? Right. And, you know, I wouldn't even say it's about keeping the blues alive. I think it probably some of that's just depending on how it's channeled, too, you know. If you had a radio station that did just blues, 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 obviously you're hammering that home. And so it's just a matter of who's marketing the idea of it. You know, I love the idea that you're doing what you're doing with Confessing the Blues here. Mm-hmm. This is great because it's a personal, small mom-and-pop desk outlet for people to actually hear what's going on in other people's lives with the blues.
For sure. I think it's a nice sort of peek behind the curtain.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
and you with the Kingsnakes. I mean, the Kingsnakes, gosh, I don't even know what year it was that you and I played together for a short time.
Right.
You know, and that was great. I think you were in Blue Island at the time.
Yeah. The 90s? It was the
90s. Probably the 90s, yeah. It was 100 years ago.
I remember.
Back in them days, I had teeth.
So, also, well, you mentioned Billy King. You played with Billy King.
Mm-hmm.
On a regular basis, and you do the jam session every Sunday at Cousins in Tinley Park.
Yes,
how about Butterflies in Traffic? What's that group about?
Well, Butterfly in Traffic started in 2009, as a matter of fact.
Okay.
And that was just kind of a fluke. I don't know if you had ever heard of a bass player by the name of Adam Whitson, but he was an upright, acoustic, funk, blues, rock, every kind of bass player you wanted. And he called me up in a panic one night, and he said, I really need you to come in, you know, and play for me tonight at my open mic. And I'm like, where is it at? And he's like, God, it was way up north. So there I was all the way out there. And then, you know, we're doing our thing, and he's doing his open mic, and we're having a blast. And, you know, to play with Adam, for one thing, he's since then passed away. He was just a great guy, and, you know, he like you and I, supported musical heartedly. Didn't make a lot of money doing it, just loved it because he's passionate. Well, in walks Edgar Schon, and Edgar Schon brings this acoustic guitar, and he's kind of this short little, you know, guy, and he walks in, and he hears me and Adam playing at a different set, and he comes up to me, and he says, will you drum for me? You know, I have a couple of originals I'd like to try out. And I'm like, sure. So he went over the apples with Adam, and then I listened in. I'm like, okay, it's just pocket, you know. Got up there, and Ed was just, like, mesmerized because he had never worked with a tighter rhythm section, he said. And so he asked me for my number, and we exchanged information. And about a year later, he called me. And he's just like, because he told me before he left, he goes, I'm putting a band together, and you're going to be the drummer. And I'm like, dang, okay, well, great, you know. Which I'm sure if anybody can relate to that. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it happens, sometimes it doesn't. Well, it did happen, and then he brought Thomas Ott and Matt Moreno over a year later, and then we met at my house, and I had a little breezeway practice room area in the house, and we just got together, and Ed sent me some files. I listened to them. We did no rehearsal, and then we got together for this rehearsal, and it sounded like we were a band for 10 years, even though it was our first day. And then 2009 to now, we're still doing it.
And there was just something I saw where you guys were featured at a Bulls game or something?
Yes, our bass player, Matt Moreno, is one of the web designers for the Chicago Bulls.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's not necessarily an in because obviously they got to be liberal about it and who they bring in and stuff like that, but Matt's in a band, and he submitted like everybody else, and they picked it. So what the Bulls do sometimes, if you submit to their management team or their marketing department, I'm also not quite sure which one it is, they'll actually take and they'll play you at halftime. You know, over the speaker system.
So that's nice to be featured in front of 25,000 people. Right?
I call it a good night, yeah. And it comes out of left field, too. And, you know, on that note, I don't know if you would ever hear it, but if anybody out there who's listening to this knows Richard Milne, there's a guy I absolutely tip my hat to because, you know, I've been featured on XRT's Local Anesthetic several times over many a years. And, you know, I understand he's stepping away from it, which, you know, I'm not one about taking any kind of market share, but I don't know anybody else that does a local anesthetic personally.
Right.
So I think one of the angles I'm going to try to do from a different standpoint is try to do a local anesthetic on, you know, One Fine Tune Radio.
You are local. Might as well feature local folks.
Exactly. And I had the platform to do it. And as opposed to just playing their record, it would be the opportunity, since the radio station is built into it, you know, come in, film it, record it, you know, feature it, and many levels to where XRT didn't do it that way. And I'm sure I could find sponsorships that would do that, because I'm very charity driven too. So any kind of profits that I usually make on something, you know, like that, if it's needed, I usually just do that.
Can we talk about your charity work? I know that you were doing some drum donations.
Yes. About 2 years ago, when I was in my South Holland shop, I had an immense opportunity to start just receiving drums that people left behind, you know, orphans, if you will. You know, I had people that called me up and said, you know, I have these drums. I don't know what to do with them. You know, so I would take these drum sets on, and some of them needed repair. Well, you know, I repaired them. So one day I was thinking to myself, you know, the holidays were coming up, and I really wanted to make a kid's life special. So I ended up you know, putting it out there on Facebook. I said, hey, you know, anybody out there who's in need of a drum set for their child or church or school or something like that, you know, reach out to me. And one of the parishioners from my church ended up reaching out to me through a friend of hers. And, you know, I called him up and said, hey, I understand that you guys are looking for a drum set for your son. And I was talking to the husband, Timothy Shorts. And he said, yes, you know, we were looking. He goes, I got injured at work this year, and I promised my son a drum set, and I don't know if I'm going to be able to pull it off financially. And I said, well, this is your lucky day. I said, but here's how the rules work. I said, I'm going to give you a drum set, and you can't tell your son about it. He goes, no, wait a minute. You're going to give me a drum set? And all of a sudden I heard, he's going to what? And he goes, hey, now stay on the road. And they almost drove off the road.
Yeah.
You know, because they were the reason for that is they were just talking about it. They were he was just really sad about the whole thing, and then I call him out of nowhere. So call it divine intervention or whatever. But sure enough, that night they brought the child over, and he walked in and he sees drums left and drums right, and he sees I had two stage areas where I had two drum sets, and you know, 9-year-old kid and with special needs. And the doctors basically said also, and why they were really wanting to get him drums was because of his handicap. Which I don't look at it as a handicap at all. You know, I look at it as a division of being able to channel oneself.
What's normal, right?
Right. What's normal, where most people don't think it's normal, because, you know, you can't help where you come from. It's knowing how to deal with where you come from.
For sure.
You know, so here this kid came in, he saw these drums, and I gave him a pair of sticks. I said, why don't you go play for me? And Jim, he started playing for me, and I was like, are you kidding me? He's awesome. You know? And I looked at his mom and dad. I said, what do you how to do this? She goes, on pots and pans, pans and boxes.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, okay. So, you know, he was done, and then he came up, and he's just like, mom and dad, he goes, you know, this is a really cool place, but why am I here? And, you know, the dad looked down at his feet and kind of like kicking a can type of look in his face. And the mom goes, well, honey, she goes, you know, your father got hurt at work this year, and he was really promising you some drums. She goes, but we just couldn't afford them this year. So, Mr. Grant's got something to tell you. And he just looked at me, and I was just like, so you want drums for Christmas? And he's like, yeah, I want drums for Christmas. And I stood by. I took a step to the left, and there was a drum set sitting right on my bench, stacked up. And I said, this is your drum set. And his guy's got his biggest baseball and, you know, mother
Santa
father,
Claus.
Santa Claus, right. And, you know, it was awesome, because the mom and dad and the kid were all crying and hugging, and it stuck, you know. So I made it a mission moving forward to continue to bless people like that, because obviously the gift of music is great in any way that you can do it, whether it be a gift card for a CD or whatever. Music moves people, and obviously, you know, there's a lot of undiscovered talent out there, and I just want to support that in every level that I can.
Where is One Fine Tune?
One Fine Tune is in Homewood, Illinois, right off of Halsted, behind the Home Depot. It's you can go to it at www.1finetune.com, and there's several links off that. There's a LinkedIn page, a Facebook page, Twitter page. What's the last one? Instagram.
All right.
Got my cheerleader over here, Jennifer. So it ended up, you know, we built all that into one wonderful website. It's very informative. And, you know, another thing in business, as you probably know, it's just like, okay, well, you run into somebody who doesn't know you from Adam. I've done probably 98% of my music or music repair in referral only. But with confidence, I can give somebody my card and say, if you really need to find out who I am and what I'm about, go to the website, because there's testimonies, videos, pictures, befores, afters, everything you need to see about that. And as the company's growing, which we're going to be rebooting the website again into new levels, you know, we'll do things having Step North on the website too, and being able to show people what else we'll be able to do for them.
Excellent.
Yeah.
I think that's about all I got. Is there anything else that you'd like to add?
Well, I'm really excited that you you have some other musical guests in here today that I'm going to be able to share this with. You know, my life is what it is.
Right.
But I'm glad that I actually get to you know, do a little session today with you, Daryl Wright, and Susan Williams.
Cool.
Yeah, I'm excited.
Let's get them up here.
Let's do it.
Susan Williams, Dale Wright, welcome to the Farmhouse Studios.
Thank you so much.
Yes.
You have some very exciting news in the form of a new record.
We do.
Yes.
And it's like being printed as we speak, right?
Right.
Can you talk about that?
Absolutely. This has been developing the idea, I guess, for over a year.
Over a year, yeah.
Right.
At least a year.
Since we both play bass, and we are together, so we spend a lot of time at home just playing different songs and that kind of thing. And the level at which Daryl plays is such that he can do a lot of lead things and play very melodically around my traditional bass line. So we just, the idea just started growing that we should do more things with both basses.
Yes, and really, the way we started to initiate it, I started going to Susan's gigs, bringing my bass.
Mm-hmm.
That was the testing ground.
That's true, yes.
We started doing that, and it's really interesting. We did it in trio settings, then in quartet, sometimes with a drummer, sometimes without a drummer, because I wanted to test it all the way around for the texture, and it just worked.
Yeah.
It worked really, really well.
And we got really good response from the audience.
Yeah.
It's very unique, but at the same time, it's like, well, why haven't people been doing this before?
you got to wonder. you got to wonder, because to me, it's pretty obvious, because like in an orchestra, you have four basses, you have cellos, you have strings.
Right.
And they all manage to play as a whole. I can't see why that could not be done in an ensemble. That you have two guitar players, don't you?
Right.
And they function, and a keyboard player. And all three of those guys play chords.
Yeah, I mean, maybe those people just think that frequency, you don't want to make it.
That has a lot to do with
it. Yeah, but that's just people's preconceived notions.
Exactly. Absolutely correct.
Yeah, we'll have some people, we tell them about it, and they're like, two basses, that'll never work.
Yeah.
I'm like, just listen to it.
You got to listen to it.
And then they listen to it, and they're like, oh my gosh, that really works.
Yeah.
So other people have the preconceived notion that it's just dueling basses.
Right.
And
no, absolutely
it's not. It's not deliverance. No, it's not dueling. It's not dueling anything. It's an accompaniment.
And do you think maybe some of it came together because you're partners in life, that that it just made sense? Because if you were a trombone player and you were a saxophone player, maybe you would be making music like that, right?
That is quite possible. I mean, you know, a lot of it has to do with me is I'm real vocal conscious. Susan has an incredible voice, and people connect to voices immediately. That's just one instrument that's just easy to connect with, is the human voice. So when I hear voices, I hear how I fit in. And I was really drawn to her voice the first time I heard her, and went, you know, I could play this, I could play that, I could play this around this. And it just really started to grow. Like I said, the going to her with her to her gigs and starting to play really told the truth about what was going to happen,
yeah,
whether we could do it or not and be successful at it. And it looks like we're going to be successful with it.
I've seen string quartets, and to me, it's so beautiful. The cello is so beautiful. It almost sounds like you're taking in the part
of the cello.
Of the cello.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
And that's, to me, is so soulful.
Yeah.
And blue at the same time.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah, it is. Absolutely.
And actually, before we did the CD with the whole band, we put together, I guess, an EP, about maybe six songs of my originals with just the two basses and vocals. Because, again, we wanted to try it out. And because we like the idea of just playing duos, going out and playing duos. And because people can't wrap their heads around it, they need something to hear to show that it really does work. So we did that first, and it turned out great,
really
we thought.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Well, the proof is in the pudding. I mean, you can tell people about a particular concept, but when they hear it,
exactly,
then the lights turn on.
Then
exactly.
The lights go on.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Right. Wow.
So is there a working title for the CD?
We actually ended up, because I thought we should name it off of one of the songs, you know, have one of them be a title track. And Daryl said, you know, it can just be a concept.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, you know, everybody's been telling me for the last 15 or 20 years, you really need to do a CD. You really need to do a CD. So I said, how about It's About Time?
Cool.
So that's what we're calling it.
Yeah. And on many levels, right?
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. On many levels.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's perfect.
So I don't know if you know, we also took this concept and entered the IBC, the International Blues Challenge, you know, on a regional level as a four-piece band with two basses, and we won the regional.
Congratulations.
So thank you. So we're going to Memphis in January and taking this concept down there, and we're so excited to kind of see what the reaction will
turn be. Turn some heads.
Oh, yeah.
That's what we hope.
A couple.
We'd like to think so.
Wow. Well, can you talk about some of the songs that we can expect to hear from the CD? I mean, what went into the writing process or, you know, the collaboration?
You know, I have song ideas running through my head, it seems like 24/7.
All the time.
Usually when I'm driving down the highway,
right.
I've always said I've forgotten more songs than I could ever possibly write because by the time I get home, I forget what it was that I came up with. Thank goodness for the voice recorder now on smartphones.
Mm-hmm.
It's helped me to grab some of them.
It has helped a lot.
Right. And I've enjoyed writing poetry since I was, you know, a student in school.
Sure.
So for me, writing lyrics comes pretty easily. And, you know, sometimes it's based off of something that's happened in your life. Sometimes it's a compilation of things or maybe something that's happened to somebody that you know. You know, everybody wants to know if everything is just, you know, a life experience. And
you could take some liberties.
Yeah. Exactly. Oh, yeah. You take the artistic, liberties.
Mm-hmm.
So I wrote, we have 11 songs on this CD, and I wrote 9 of them. And Mike Gallimore, our guitar player, wrote 2 of them that I'm also singing them, but he's the writer. And I just think we've got some
really, really good songs.
Some great songs.
Yeah. And, you know, in the process, since we're both bassists, but Susan sings and plays bass. So a lot of what we do, I like her to create the line because she's the one got to play it and sing it.
Sure.
Not me.
Yeah, it's difficult to play bass and sing.
So, you know, she creates the bass lines, and I kind of just listen to where she's going and listen to the melody. And where her comfort zone is at, then we start to build from that. We usually build from lines that she creates, and then we start to build around that, starting to come up with ideas melodically.
Right. Daryl really helped a lot with the arrangements of the songs. Because sometimes I could hear a song 2 or 3 different ways.
Right.
And then I start confusing myself. You know, it's like, oh, I could hear it going like this. I could hear it going
sure.
like this.
Yeah.
It's like, well, why don't you try this?
It's nice to have a collaborator, someone to bounce ideas off.
Yeah.
I've written a lot of songs about myself and also collaborated with some. And it's so much nicer because they have the self-doubt. Should I go to a minor chord? Should I do the key change? Should I stay on the one? But
exactly.
When you have somebody else, they're like, clearly, you need to go to that to that minor chord or whatever, you know?
Right. And, you know, a lot of people have the wrong idea that blues is all just standard 3 chords, same progression every time. And And we didn't want that. We wanted them to, you know, definitely sound like blues, but to have some variety going on.
Yeah.
So he just, his ears are good in that way that he can hear those different ideas. And, you know, so we tried to just add some just unique turnarounds or that kind of thing.
If you were to characterize your music on the record as blues or?
Yes.
Blues with a lot of textures. You know, you'll hear different influences inside of the tunes, but basically it's basic call response blues. A lot of it is, but some of it has backbeat, some of it is shuffle. Like I said, it's a hodgepodge. But it's still all blues based and rooted.
Okay.
It's rooted in blues.
Well, hearing your voice through the headphones, Daryl, I have to ask, do you sing?
Yes, I do.
Excellent. I can't wait to hear that.
I'm a bass baritone. I had no choice.
Right. Well, it works.
It works.
You know?
It's working for me.
And when James Earl Jones passes away.
I've been trying to get his gig, Sam Elliott's gig, Peter Coyote's gig.
You know?
You know, Dennis Haysbert. I'm trying to get all them cats gig, and I just can't. Maybe I should have been an actor. Maybe.
The women coming up to him all the time, and you're just enthralled with his voice. We went out for our anniversary to Olive Garden, and the waitress could not stop hitting on him all night long. Just wanted to talk to him.
Yeah.
Oh, I just love your voice. I love your voice.
Say something. Say what?
Right. How's the chicken?
How's the chicken? Yeah. You making any money tonight?
Susan, I know when I first met you, you had come to the Chicago area, and you were a teacher in Central Illinois, and you've since moved on to just make music your focus?
I just retired from teaching this past summer. And although I've been doing music professionally for over 30 years, I now can focus 100% of my time on it. So, which is also why I had the time now to write and do the CD. So, yes, I'm very excited about that.
And what did you teach?
Special ed.
Oh, excellent.
High school special ed.
And Daryl, how about your background?
Oh, my background is pretty interesting. I started out playing piano first. And my dad's real instrumental in a lot of my music choices. And he saw that I had a natural aptitude to play bass. He's a bass singer.
Mm-hmm.
So it was really easy for me to mimic his lines. They were just easy for me to remember. And the story I like to tell is when I was about 14, we were watching The Tonight Show. And he looked over at me and he said, you see that guy over there on the TV? I said, yeah. He goes, you like playing, don't you? I go, yeah. He goes, that's a good job. He had already associated music with, can you get a job?
Right.
Not, can you get a band?
Sure.
Can you get a job? And I said, well, what do you mean? He says, well, that guy plays every night with somebody different, and the check is good. I said, yeah, that's for me. And so he got me a mentor who was studying at Roosevelt University. And basically, the way I came about playing was traveling with my dad. But this guy taught me conceptually how to play, like learning language. You can look at something and you can play it. You understand it because you understand the language. You know, it's like we all come here, we can talk, but we can't read when we first get here. But you do acquire that skill. And it's just, he saw that I needed to have all these skills if I was going to participate in this business. And so that worked out for me real well.
Yeah,
it worked out very well.
So many parents say, well, yeah, you should get a real job and that can be a nice hobby. So it's great that he nurtured that.
And he gave me the insight to, you can join a band, but you need to get a job. He was still saying, you need to get a job.
Sure.
He said, you need to get a job, but that's the job. He had me shoot for that kind of work, shoot my way in that direction. So it was very good. Because like I said, I've been a journeyman most of my life. I've been a part of two or three different bands, and that's a whole other business animal. But the other thing of just playing and being able to survive really requires your skill level at different types of skills. And I try to teach that too when I'm teaching and doing clinics. It's your skill level is what's going to get you to these other areas, no matter what you're playing, you know, what what genre you play. Like I said, I've just been very fortunate to be able to have a vehicle created so I can do what it is I would like to do.
And this, you grew up in Chicago?
Grew up in Chicago, mm-hmm. Yes. Grew up in Chicago, yeah. Went to Chicago State University, Von Steuben High School, studied some at Daly College in Chicago and St. Xavier College, yeah.
And I imagine being a journeyman and being a sideman, you've played all kinds of gigs.
Oh, one gig, it's shame to say, I think Susan's seen it. I have a sombrero and a jacket on. Because I got a call to come in and do a Mexican party. And the guy says, well, you know, we have to wear these hats and these outfits. So there's a picture of me on the net with this,
right.
Me and three other guys. And I get to the gig and everybody thinks I'm a Dominican. We're playing all these Latin tunes.
Right.
But had I not been around many things, I would have been prepared to come in and do something like that that quickly.
And to your dad's credit, you got the check.
I got the check. You know? I got paid.
Yeah. I mean, we've all done those gigs where maybe we're uncomfortable with the situation.
Heaven. Oh, yeah.
But at the end of the day, you got the gig, you played, you made some music, you made some money.
Absolutely.
And it probably made you stronger.
It's a win-win.
Yeah.
It's a win-win. Take something positive from every situation you go into.
For sure.
Take something out of it.
You see, he's being very modest about who he's played with.
Well, tell me. Tell. Maybe drop some names.
Well, I've been fortunate enough to play with Billy Preston, Mavis Staples, Joey DeFrancesco. I played bass for the Miracles. I've done a lot of really interesting things. It's been just a lot of fun, you know, a lot of fun.
So playing with an organist like Joey DeFrancesco, do you have to compete with his left hand?
Now, that's really
bass?
Interesting. No, I did a recording with Joey in Phoenix, Arizona. And what he had me come in and do is I played slap bass against his pedals.
Okay.
So once again, it was already counter to what was going on. We'd be both playing bass, but this is what I need you to do.
Yeah.
That's interesting. It was very, very good.
So it kind of is a similar concept where you got two bass things happening.
Mm-hmm.
And making it work.
A very similar concept, yeah.
And the Miracles, was that with Smokey or?
No. This is after Smokey. And once again, that was a cold call. Just the Miracles in town. They need somebody to play bass. Can you do it? Yeah, I can do it. Never say no.
No.
Always say yes.
Yeah.
Always say yes. And so like I said, it's been really pretty interesting. And I've worked in the Catholic Church. I've worked in the Lutheran Church. I've worked in the theater. Like I said, my life, I've been very, very fortunate.
Well, both of you, I want to ask just maybe different influences that you've had as a musician. Susan, can you tell me different, and it doesn't even have to be bass players, just different musical influences.
Right. Well, I grew up playing the piano as well for several years. So that was, you know, my baseline, and then I played in the school band, sang in the school choir, you know, sang in school plays and musicals and that kind of thing. So I've really been singing and involved in music for, honestly, as long as I can remember. In my house, when I was a child, my father said, there are two kinds of music, country and Western. And that's what will be played in this home. So I have a very strong background in country music, which I still enjoy to this day. By all means, I think I owned two or three albums as a child. I remember I had a Nancy Sinatra album. I had the Supremes. I feel like I had one other one. But, you know, from the time I was a child, I sang along to everything that I ever heard on the radio. So honestly, I mean, vocally, I would say Patsy Cline was my first huge influence. And I happen to think, even though she's known in the country world, that she's a very powerful blues singer.
Right.
She really is. And I think she still influences the way I sing to some extent, because she's one of the best. Bonnie Raitt is an absolute idol for me. I love her voice. And Etta James, you know, the thing is, it's like I take, because I listen to all genres, and I mean, if music is good, it's good. So I try to take what is it that I really like about this person's voice, about their, you know, is it their style? Is it their, the timbre of their voice? What is it?
Sure. That's their approach, phrasing.
Yeah. That's making them so successful and make me want to listen to them because that's what I want to learn from them, you know? So, I mean, I think playing bass, I didn't start playing bass till I was 30 years old. And that's because the first band I was ever in, I was singing in my church, and the organist at the church, who was also the music director, came up to me and said, I'm starting a band, and you need to come and audition for my band, which had been something I always wanted to do, never really knew how, I guess, to go about it.
Sure.
And so I started singing in his band, and they didn't have a bass player because he was running the bass line on the keyboard. So it was going, you know, I thought very well, and we were doing really well. A couple of the other band members who were nice guys, but they made a comment that just hurt my feelings about that I shouldn't be getting paid as much as them because I wasn't playing an instrument. Mind you, I was singing all the songs,
right?
All of them. But it just really struck me wrong, and I was very sensitive back then, and so I was talking to the keyboard player about it because he was, you know, my friend. And he goes, go buy a bass and learn how to play the bass. He said, you'll pick it up. You know music theory. You know how to play the piano. You'll pick it up in no time. And as you get comfortable playing songs that we're doing, then pick up the bass and play it. If we come to a song that you're not yet comfortable doing, put the bass down and I'll do it on the keyboard. 3 months later, I was playing at least some of the songs.
Great.
You know, on the bass. And I have always credited him with that would never have occurred to me, honestly, if he hadn't suggested it. And, you know, it's made me more marketable as a musician, of course.
Sure.
You know.
Always looking for a bass player, right?
Always.
Exactly.
And one that can sing.
You know?
Right. So that was probably the best advice anyone's given me my whole life, at least related to music.
Yeah, that's excellent. And Daryl, how about you? Any just certain influences?
Influences
just really.
Yeah, you know, it's. I would have to say, the guy that mentored me, his name was Willie Moore. He's no longer alive. He taught me an awful lot about music, as a whole. And the way he would, like I said, he would bring things to me is he would show me like a blues tune, how it goes. Plus, I was already playing gospel, and I knew gospel and blues were cousins.
Mm-hmm.
I knew that they were related. I could hear the similarities. But he would teach me movements. And then when he finished, he goes, well, now you know 60 songs. And I had no idea what he was talking
right.
about. Then he'd show me some Latin tunes. He says, now you know about another 50. Then he'd show me some reggae. And he would show me just these movements. And in learning those movements, I started to listen to artists a lot closely, very, very closely. And I ended up becoming a big fan of jazz and upright playing because I played cello and upright in high school. So I was really influenced a lot by Ron Carter.
Sure.
Ron Carter, Ray Brown. Niles Pettison, Anthony Jackson on electric, which a lot of people don't know who he is. Money, 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 the OJs.
Okay, wow.
That's Anthony Jackson. Okay. And everybody thinks that's a guitar, it's a bass.
Yeah.
Him playing multi-string in the 70s. So I had already started to listen as to what could be done with certain instruments. Then I started to branching out more into, I've always been vocal conscious. I tell Susan this all the time. One of the reasons I ended up playing bass like I was because I couldn't sing. And I was surrounded by people that could sing. My dad could sing. All my uncles could sing. My cousins could sing. Everybody opened their mouth and just sweet. I said, I got to be the best bass player around here because I'll never get hired singing because these people can sing me under the table. But I took it and pushed it in a direction to be better at what I was doing. But eventually I did have to start singing.
Yeah.
Out of necessity. Once again, I didn't say no. I said, yeah, I think I can. And went on and just started singing and started to listen to people vocally. and realized, well, I can't do that, but I can get this pitch here. I can get this pitch here until I started to find out I could sound like myself. And that was the main thing, is it sounding like myself and not sounding like somebody else.
For sure.
You know, that was...
Your own voice.
Your own voice, yeah. Mm-hmm.
If there was a message that you'd like to share with people to explain what this new CD is, what would you say? What would you say to them? So, you know, if you're in an elevator and you have that 15 seconds to say, hey, you got to check out this record because...
Well, we think that it's like toe-tapping, finger-snapping music that just, you know, either is going to make you want to chair dance or get up on the dance floor. I've had people tell me already, the few people that have heard even some of the songs, you know, that they feel like it's really relaxing.
Mm-hmm.
So, and again, we tried so hard to, you know, to go back and forth with tempos and that kind of thing, so we'd have a little bit of everything like that. So I think it's just music that's going to make them feel happy and alive, and want to go out and buy the CD.
Yes, want to go out and buy the CD. I think the message I'd like for them to have is that it makes you feel good. You know, because some people listen and immediately they listen with a ear of competition.
Mm-hmm.
When you know, competition can be healthy. You know, from playing sports, I understand that it can be healthy. But there's also a message inside of sports, the same way as there's a message in music. So if it makes you feel good, that's the bottom line. Does it make you feel good? And that's what I wanted to do, is make them feel good.
I look forward to hearing it.
Oh, yeah.
We're excited for you to hear it.
We sure are. We want him toe-tapping, finger-snapping.
That's right.
So what do you say we make some music?
Let's make some music.
Yeah. All right.
You say you can't come home because there's just too much to do. You tell me that you'll call me about a quarter to two. Well, now it's 7:30, my phone still didn't ring. I guess it's just because your word don't mean a thing. Shame on you for treating me this way. Shame on me for not walking away. You know I really love you and I want to stay, but shame on you for treating me this way. I treat you like a king even though you play me for a fool. I wash your clothes, I cook your meals, I make sweet love to you. You take all that I give, you think it's just what you deserve. You give me nothing back, I think you got a lot of nerve. Shame on you for treating me this way. Shame on me for not walking away. You know I really love you and I want to stay, but shame on you for treating me this way. Changes, don't expect me to stay. Shame on you for treating me this way. Shame on me for not walking away. You know I really love you and I wanna stay, but shame on you for treating me this way. Shame on you. Shame on me. 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 What am I talking about, baby? This is all on you. Shame on you.